back, footy fans. It has arrived. The net first Donnie's disposal of the AFL season. I'm your host, Coach Donnie Hess here, and joining me for round zero / opening round, depending on who you talk to, joining me from California, USA, good friend of the podcast, Mr. Rick Schiaboni. Rick, great to see you, sir.
Great to be back here, Donnie. I appreciate the invite as always. Glad we could take some time and talk about footy. It's a great time of year, you know, obviously on field with USAFL stuff and with footy back on TV. You know, there's a positive energy in the air, and it's great to be a part of it. So I'm excited to talk footy again.
Always. And a little chuckle to myself when I saw that both of our teams played in this round and both of our teams got a win. So we have chuckle at that on that. So before we jump into the nuts and bolts of each of the games, just your thoughts on round zero, because the Northern States get their little limelight and they showed out.
They sure did. The attendance was, you know, flying colors all the way around. You know, it was, you know, inevitably when the AFL experiments with fixture, like with this or with, you know, gather rounds, like there's going to be mixed feelings, but it felt like it was mostly positive, just like gather round was mostly positive. And yeah, there's always going to be the little inherent bias against the rugby states, as it were. But yeah, I mean, GWS made a statement win. Sydney, your Swans definitely made a statement win as well. I think, you know, the energy was there. And it was definitely something that, you know, the AFL was encouraging. But, you know, either way, the attendance figures were great and we got some entertaining footy. I hope that maybe in the future we could do kind of combine what gather round does and what opening round does. You know, again, you can never please everybody with the fixture. We know this. We all know. And I guess we love our footy traditionalists who insist any change is automatically wrecking the game, but that's why we love footy, you know, the different opinions and the personalities. And you know, it's definitely an interesting start to the year. I know it's kind of like a soft start to the year, and some people feel like it's, you know, giving some teams a head start where, you know, but I mean the fixture is never 100% equal anyway, so I feel like that's kind of a non-argument. I don't know what your thoughts are, but yeah, it was definitely a success overall. Opening round, or round zero, like you said, it definitely had some really good moments. So we'll see what they do with it.
Well, I'll try to keep this really quickly. I watched AFL 360 and I heard the Geelong coaches question in my first comment that I said out loud, and I try not to yell when I do this, and I basically say, I go, when has the fixture ever not been compromised due to the fact that there are so many Victorian clubs in the competition? So that is all I'm going to say. And especially considering I find it fascinating as a Geelong coach, and it's like, hey, bud, how many home games do you actually play at GMHBA Stadium? No. Though you have a stadium, how many? Oh, it's 8. How many are you supposed to have? 11. Why are 3 of your home games at the MCG? Oh, I don't know why. Maybe because, oh yeah, we won't say that. We'll leave it there. So for me, I loved it. I thought it was fantastic. Was it perfect? Absolutely not. There'll be tinkers. They will change it. Do I think it did exactly what the AFL wanted? Yes and no. Yes, it got a lot of excitement to GWS and to Gold Coast, which I think Sydney and Brisbane are kind of outliers because they were already in the NRL markets and they're already established clubs. So you had a little bit of the history that went with them. So there's still this love from Victoria for those particular two clubs. It was Gold Coast and GWS that are literally the poof, you are a club now kind of things. And to see full crowds at both of those particular venues was fantastic. I think it's great. Brilliant. The biggest thing is, can they harness that and keep it going? Because one of the things that'll be frustrating is next Gold Coast home game and there's 5,000 people is going to be a little deflating no matter how it goes. So
yeah,
let's go through each of these games, because I know each has some fun talking points, each had a little bit of drama, each had a little bit of fun. So let's go through it. We'll start with Thursday night footy. As you said, my Sydney Swans get a big win by 22, 86-64. And I had to say, I was super nervous. This was really difficult to try to get some sleep before this game because I didn't know what to expect. Brody Grundy comes in. How is Brody going to handle this opportunity to face Max Gaughan again? How was the reemergence of Clayton Oliver back into this Melbourne team? And this was a game that I admit, yes, what many people said, the first half was hard to watch because the dew really got to a lot of the players. I mean, Christian Petracca does not fumble, and he fumbled three times and one play in the wing. That just shows you how difficult these conditions were. And I agree with what Christian Petracca said on AFL 360. The Swans adjusted to it quicker and capitalized on it. And the D's just never, once the halftime, the second half started, they just never could ever get it caught back up.
Yeah, no, spot on. And I did see that Petrarca interview, and you know, it's ironic because you know Melbourne had 500, or not 353 disposals. Sydney had 357, so it was pretty even. And like the kicks and handballs, Melbourne out handballed them quite a bit. So it goes to show how statistics can be deceiving as far as that goes. And yeah, Petrarca was kind of chalking it up to how you know. Or you know, the Sydney boys play in more humid conditions in preseason, so you know, playing with a wet footy is probably something they're more used to. But either way, it was a nice win. You know, there's a lot of questions over Melbourne and like the direction they're heading, you know, into this season. But their premiership window is still open, and yeah, that's a nice win at home for Sydney that can you know build some confidence heading forward because you know, consistency has been an issue with the Swans, as you know, the last few seasons, but they're the really good core, a really good young core. Your boy Errol Golden had another great game. And you know, that they're definitely you know, looking pretty cohesive already. Like you said, the first half was sloppy, but chalk it up to you know, the first game nerves or the weather or both. But I think the Swans definitely adapted and they were able to kind of, you know, set the tone. McLean, Hayward, you know, they've been involved. They're definitely going to be, you know, some of the next key leaders as the Swans kind of just try to stay above water because it's easy to fall behind when you're, you know, not quite top four, but you're still a finals contender, right? And that's where the Swans are at right now. They know their brand under Longmire, as you know, but they're definitely, I think it's just about tweaking different things and being consistent week to week. So they'll be in the mix again, and this was an encouraging start.
Yeah, well, the scary part is that Isaac Heaney had an absolute belter. You know, I mean, 13 clearances in this game, and for a guy that's been played for the longest time, has been 80% forward, and goes into the midfield with Luke Parker breaking his arm, and then Taylor Adams having his knee injury in one of those last games, and Callum Mills' unfortunate incident that happened at Mad Monday that is going to put him probably to about halfway through the season. So for Isaac Heaney to step up in a really big game against a really good midfield and to do what he did, and Brody Grundy being able to kind of exercise the first of his two former team's demons and be able to kind of basically, I think, outplay Max Gaughan for 75% of that game, which I have one gripe. I was listening to the coverage and David King, can you please go back and watch the first quarter again? Because I don't know what he was watching, but I did not see a Gaughan dominance. I saw an even ruck contest for the first quarter, and then Brody Grundy started his little tactic of going over the halfway line and kind of cutting off Max Gaughan so he can't fully run to the ball, and then being able to kind of tap it down to his. So I really don't know what David King was watching, but I was sitting there going, "What are you talking about? Max Gaughan is not dominating this game in the ruck. It's about 50-50 if you really look at the taps." And then the funny part is he continues on with it and the statistics below. I'm like, dude, do you not see the statistics below you? The statistics totally tell it's completely different thing. I don't know. But that
I
was
mean
my
it's
one gripe that I had about the coverage was just like, I don't know what David King was watching in the first quarter. I seriously don't, but it was not the game that I was watching, and I'm trying to watch it as neutral as I can. That was not a dominance by Max Gaughan. In fact, Brody Grundy pretty much as the game went on got more and more dominant as Max Gaughan tired and tired from the beating that he was taking, not only from Grundy, but then the fellow Swans as well. So
well, you know, like I think if you boil down the art of ruck work to just hit outs, then yeah, Gaughan had the slight upper hand. But you're right, it was pretty even. And again, the stats don't lie. You've Gaughan had 37 hit outs, Grundy had 33, yes. But Grundy had 6 tackles and 4 marks. Gaughan had 4 tackles and 1 mark. So yeah, in terms of the impact on the game and the disposal count and most other elements of footy, like Grundy was definitely on par, if not better. So yeah, I think that was definitely a challenge. But again, it's going to set the tone for the rest of the season if they can get that consistent output from Grundy over, you know, higher rated rucks, because that'll be key.
Yeah, definitely, for sure. So we have to go to it. I could talk about the Swans game all day long, but we can't do that. I want to be as neutral as possible. So we'll move up to the GABA Friday night footy as the Brizzy Lions fall at home for the first time in a decade to the Carlton Blues, 86-85. And sir, I remember sitting there at the end of the first quarter, because I had to watch this on tape delay, and I went, oh no, don't tell me this is going to be another Friday night blowout. And as this game progressed and then the second half, I was like, oh my God, is Carlton going to do it? And just, I was beyond amazed on how this game played out, because with everything that Carlton was missing and then losing Doherty to his, we eventually find out as an ACL, and then finding out Kitty Coleman had done the same thing. This game was marred with a little bit of everything, but it was an absolutely electric game. Full kudos to the people that got together for the Blues Brothers section. I oh my God, that was epic. So cool. But your thoughts on this game, because this was definitely the game of the round.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, you're absolutely right. It was an amazing comeback. Like you mentioned, the injury carnage, you hate to see that. Coleman, he's obviously been a really bright young star for the Lions. Doherty, his injury history is well documented. Poor guy can't catch a break. But this is the kind of game Carlton needs to win if they're going to be taken seriously this year. I know they've got ambitions of being a top four side. Me personally, I've got them in my top four. But yeah, I mean, this is the kind of gritty win that, they needed. Like, I think that there have been some questions about the Blues and, like, we all know how tough Michael Voss was as a player for the Brisbane Lions, of course. I feel like everyone felt like Carlton didn't have that Michael Voss kind of grit to win out in these kinds of games or have a 1-point win or have a massive comeback. You just felt like Carlton wasn't there yet. This year, again, if you want to talk about setting the tone for the rest of the season, if Carlton wants to make a deep run in September, it starts with games like this. Now, of course, you can argue they should never have fallen behind by 6 or 7 goals to begin with. But, I think, and with their injury list, they've still got some guys that they're working to get back, like Jack Martin. I know they're, Jacob Wiedering, they're still trying to get back. Walsh. The sooner the better, obviously, because every win counts. But this was a gritty win that they needed to get. And I think if Carlton can, try to weather the storm and play 4 consistent quarters of footy more frequently, they don't have to play catch up. I think that would behoove them. But nonetheless, this is a really important win for them. It's hard to win at the GAB when it's 35K fans up there. That place gets loud. So I think in general, that was a really nice win for the Blues. Big comeback or otherwise, that was a win over a flat contender, and they needed to do that, especially on the road.
Definitely, 100%. And then kind of the redemption story / should do what he done with the storylines with Harry Mackay. Like I said, I kind of sit 50-50. I agree with what some of the people in the media said. It's like Harry Mackay should be doing that with the money that Carlton's paying him. But to see him succeed after some of the times over the last couple of years of him finding a way to bugger it up, if I'm being 100% honest, it was kind of cool. So I have to give him on that one. So we'll jump from what was the most interesting game or the most exciting game to probably what I would consider the most interesting game, because this was one of those where another, like the at halftime, I was like, OMG, are we going to see a blowout? As Gold Coast comes out, blitzes the Richmond Tigers, Richmond kind of fights back in the start of the third quarter, but then really the Suns just a little bit too much. And again, I understand Richmond is down. No Dusty Martin, no Lynch, no Nankervis. Suns have all this momentum. They have the new coach, the god of coaching, Damian Hardwick. Again, I say this facetiously, ladies and gentlemen. First ever coaching experience. He gets the win, and there's so much talk. This is one of those that I'm going to hold my judgment on Gold Coast, because this was a injured Richmond team with a brand new coach. That is his first time coaching. There's a lot of cobwebs on that Richmond side that need to be fixed. I think there's still some things to go. Impressive win by Gold Coast. Great to see Matty Rao playing up to his potential with everything that he did. A fantastic performance there. Again, this is a Gold Coast side. Talent-wise, if you look at it on paper, should be a finals team. We'll have to see. It's a long season, but this was a great first step for Damian Hardwick's era at the Gold Coast Suns with a nice, impressive 39-point win over Richmond, 99-60.
Yeah, no, I'm just looking at my notes here. And yeah, I mean, Rowell was phenomenal. You know, that's a three-vote Brownlow performance if I've ever seen one. He was dumb. I think, time will tell with Gold Coast, as it seems like it is most seasons. You know, they've got a talented list. We know that. But it's never all fallen into place for them, as we know. But you know, Hardwick was a phenomenal hire, obviously, and the players are really gravitating to him. Another guy, shout out to Malcolm Roses. He's a guy who he kicked three goals too. He could have had more, but he's a young goal sneak that they're really high on. I know he had a very positive summer, just a young guy from Darwin who just seems to have all the tools to be kind of like a young man or a poor man's Charlie Cameron, you could say. You know, he's just got really good athleticism. He's kind of sneaky quick, and he can pick some really nice banana goals or check side goals. So I think he's a guy who's really developing nicely up on the Gold Coast. Obviously, Ben King is getting all the love, another five goal bag from him. So he was huge as usual. But in terms of the young talent at the Suns, I reckon Roses probably gets overlooked a bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
definitely. And in terms of Richmond, like, I mean, it might be a cliche to say big picture stuff, but I think they're kind of going through an identity crisis right now, because you mentioned the injuries. Like, obviously, we know Dusty's out. He's entering the twilight of his career anyway. He's kind of the odd man out now that, you know, Revolt and Pachin are retired. But Tom Lynch, he's come back. But let's be honest, Tom Lynch disappeared one game and he had six goals the next. You know, he's been very up and down the last few years. We know the Tigers still have plenty of talent. We know the Rioli, Shea Bolton, won best in Ferris. He's going to have another great year. Nankervis, when he's 100%, he's a solid above average rough. They clearly got, you know, guys like Liam Baker of Boston, who you remember I drafted on fantasy. There's still plenty of talent on the list. Richmond is probably going to be a bottom four side because they're rebuilding and everyone else has basically jumped ahead of them. But, like, I think they haven't really fully committed to, like, oh, we're going to tear down the studs and start over. There's a new generation of leaders here. Let's rebuild through the draft. I don't think they're quite there yet. I think they're still trying to, you know, they're a fan base that doesn't want to take their lumps because they've gotten used to winning. They've gotten spoiled, right? But I think they might have to back around the hatches and brace themselves for a tough year. Do kind of what Sam Mitchell is doing at Hawthorne, you know, short-term pain for long-term gain, you know, that kind of thing. But Richmond doesn't want to accept they're a bottom four side, and unfortunately it looks like they are. So they'll compete. We know they'll compete. We know they've got talent, but I don't see the wins coming there, quite frankly.
Yeah, they're going to have to steal a few just to kind of get a little bit more momentum back in Tigerland for sure. I'm not disagreeing with you at all. So, and I'm not even going to give a breakdown on this because I have to defer to you as one of my many Giants supporting friends. Your thoughts on this? A huge win for your Giants over the Pies.
Yeah, no, I mean it was you know, the orange tsunami. Like, you know, we've come to expect kind of now that Adam Kingsley, you know, he's got his culture, his scheme, everything's established now in year two. Of course, we had the surprise finals berth, but the fast attacking pace of footy. We know we have the guns and the people in the midfield to do it. You know, Josh Kelly, Tom Green, of course, he led the league in disposal averages last year, if I'm not mistaken. You know, we know what we have with Coniglio. Alan Ward, unfortunately, he got hurt, but, you know, he's a veteran in the midfield who really helped set the tone. And, I think it was just a phenomenal win on all fronts. Again, amazing crowd, amazing energy. Of course, the social media team is undefeated as always. Thank you, Mason Cox. But I'm not going to rehash that now. We've all seen the end of the drama. But the Giants made a really nice win. They really did. Shout out to Jesse Hogan. Like, again, we've seen him not quite beat a GWS, but he was kind of like the prodigal son, you know, being the nomad, you know, had some injuries, some really bad luck with injuries, had some, you know, mental health struggles, but like really kind of found his groove with GWS. And, you know, and he's a guy, he's a big target. He can kick a bag like he did on the weekend, but, you know, he's also just a big distraction to, you know, Toby Green can do his thing way better, put it that way, when Hogan is dragging a defender with him. And Callum Brown too. Like, Callum Brown has been phenomenal. Like, I had a chance to meet him. I did not have a chance to meet him. I met a few other Giants, but when they came to the grand final party in LA a few years ago. But I did meet Brent Daniels. I thought he kicked it back on his birthday, which was very exciting. But Callum Brown is great because when you get Irish guys, like, you expect them to be really fit, right? Because Gaelic, you know, it's almost the same level of running that there is in footy. But for those of your listeners who might not know, Gaelic football is not full contact. So you kind of expect the Gaelic guys to come over and not be as built or, you know, need to spend some more time in the weight room. But not Callum Brown. He's very well built. And he's got a great mark on him. He's really improved his kicking accuracy, and he was already really good. So I love having him at center back forward. He's not afraid to use his body to make physical contact, and that's what you love to see. And again, the more he can be a ball magnet, the more it allows Toby Green to get involved in other ways, because we know how dangerous he is. We know how you have Toby Green, because he will destroy you. But the more threats we develop there, the better. And the midfield just gets – it just goes from strength to strength. And I'm excited to see Finn Callahan back. I know he had a foot problem. Not sure if he's going to make it this round. Of course, we're playing North Melbourne. So good chance to get off to a 2-0 start. But getting Callahan back is going to be key. You know, he's another young gun that we can really use. And again, we've got a really nice system, not just with like the GWS Academy kids, but just we've drafted really well the last several years. And I think it's really paying dividends. And I think we've also been smart in terms of like managing losses in free agency, because we know they'll come, but you know, the list right now is in very good shape. I really do think that we've got a potential top four list again. Time will tell, as we know, but again, chance to get off to a 2-0 start and really build some great momentum.
Yeah, 100% with you. I thought it was a fantastic game, and I completely agree with you. Their social media team is 100% undefeated over the weekend. I had to say there were several things that came out that I had to chuckle on. I thought it was fantastic. I'm gonna jump on a little bit of the fence a little bit when it comes to Collingwood. I don't think it's panic stations, but I do think there were a few things that are worrying signs for Collingwood a little bit that I saw, that if they happen again this week, then maybe the panic button might be closer to being touched down in Victoria, because this is a Pies team that they've enjoyed their premiership. Is Lee Matthews maybe even a little bit right that maybe they enjoyed it a little bit too much? So we won't go to that. We will move on. We get to one of my favorite parts in this burning questions. These are some questions that I've thought about over the weekend, and I just want to get your thoughts on these. The first one, we kind of discussed a little bit, but I really want to know for you as a GWS fan, there might be a tiny bit of bias when it comes to this. Round zero, is this something that you liked, and is this something you think should happen again next season?
We kind of touched on it in the intro. I think it's a decent idea. You know, like, again, there's pros and cons to everything. Like I said, I think the ideal thing would be to kind of combine it with Gather Round, which means it wouldn't really be opening round. But you know, having the idea to kind of showcase games, you know, I was listening to Craig Wessels, our good buddy. Of course, he's in our fantasy league. His podcast the other day, he was kind of floating an idea of, you know, doing a kind of combination gather round at different venues in Queensland. So, you know, Gold Coast, Brisbane, Townsville. Obviously, Townsville is more tropical, so you need to do it, you know, around gather round time when it's not as humid. But, and of course, Cairns is an option there as well. I know the AFL is reluctant to play there because of that downpour game that was played in the monsoon. I think it was the Roos and the Sun several years ago, but that game was absurd. But, and I lived in Darwin for a few months. I know how it gets up north. But, but no, yeah, I think having kind of combining the two things, you know, to where you can showcase the game in the non-traditional state, grow the game there, draw more support for it locally, again, sell out the stadiums, and then kind of combine it with the best things about Gather. Because Gather Round, you know, Adelaide really shines when it comes to that kind of stuff because, you know, they're used to doing those kinds of festivals down there. But, but no, yeah, I think doing something like that in Queensland or, you know, or a remote thing where you can get Darwin and the territory involved, like, there's a lot of options. And I think the AFL can get creative with that. But, yeah, opening round's a good idea. It could definitely be improved upon. But I'm not opposed to it on principle or anything. So it was a decent start.
Yeah, I'd almost like a hybrid. Like I almost kind of want like opening round to be a little bit of what I'd love to see, and I kind of liked this idea is instead of just doing eight teams, so you could somehow get all of the teams, but make the primetime games, the games that are big on TV. So the Thursday night, the Friday night, the Saturday primetime, and then the Sunday, and just play just the primetime ones be those northern states. So say we do again like this year, Sydney, Melbourne on Thursday. Instead of doing I know there's some Victorias that are going to lose their minds because I'm stepping on this at the Carlton Richmond one, which again I want to put up again. I heard so many people, this is boring, this is horrible footy. Did we not remember what last year's first game of the season between Richmond and Carlton ended at? Wasn't it a 58-58 draw? Woo, yeah. That really gets me going. So it's kind of one of those, there's some arguments that I think are very not thought out, but make the primetime games the northern state games, but then still play the Victorian games, the West, the WA, and the SA games. So then you still get all the teams playing, but you prime time the games where you really are trying to make footy grow, which again I find a little bit fascinating because Queensland this year will actually have more youth footy players playing footy in Queensland than in South Australia, but that's a fact that for some weird reason nobody wants to talk about. But
digress. Or the fact that, you know, as much as I love the idea of a Tassie team, the participation rates in Tassie have been stagnating for years. But you know, that's a conversation for another day.
So we'll jump off the diatribe topic, but we'll go to another one that I know has a lot of discussions, and that was the two heavily talked about bumps at the end of the year and how the suspensions have kind of went through, because I know it was a huge talking point last year after Angus Brayshaw's hit by Braden Maynard, which again sometimes can cause quite heated discussions. And yeah. I've had a nice discussion with a few people about it, and I can see both sides of this. But for me, were the two hefty suspensions enough of a deter that we start to see this crap come out of the game?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question. And, you know, obviously Brayshaw retired in the offseason. You know, the Maynard hit was, you know, discussed to death, you know, in the media. It was a very controversial issue, and understandably so. And then, of course, the more recent one with Jimmy Webster and Jai Simpkin, you know, my mind immediately went to, you know, of course, Parco's reaction and subsequent fine, you know, that was a big circus. But it reminded me a little bit of, like, you know, the infamous Essendon Hawthorn game in 2009 when Matty Lloyd knocked out Brad Sewell. And Parco, of course, confronted him in the tunnel or the race on the MCG, whatever you want to call it. after the game and got in his face. And, you know, I was like, oh, that's Parco. He's going to go to bat for his players. And it was one of those things where, again, in the broader sense of the concussion and the hit issue, John Simpkin, of course, poor guy, that's his third concussion in, what, 18 months? Something like 18 that. Months, I mean, yep. You get the feeling that, rightly or wrongly, if it hadn't been his third in that amount of time, Webster probably would have gotten 4 to 6 instead of 7. I feel like the fact that it was Simpson's another recent concussion for him, and because of the media narrative around concussions, that was what pushed them over the 6-game ban to 7 games. And it's a real shame, because Webster doesn't have any, I don't think he has any prior disciplinary, I don't think he's been reported before, if I'm not mistaken. So, you know, this does seem out of character for him. And obviously you just hope Simpkin can make a return in the latter half of the season and still have a decent year as the Ruse try to improve. But yeah, I mean, it's really unfortunate. Like, again, the players are confused because they feel like they're going against their instincts. Like, you know, who was it last year who was like, yeah, if I don't make that tackle, I'm going to get dropped from the 22. And shit happens with hits in footy. We know that. And it really does suck. But it's really hard to stamp out hits like this unless they're really egregious, like Jimmy Webster. So I think it's a very hard line to press because player safety is first and foremost, but you can't players to just, gently cover him in pillows instead of tackling him. So it's an impossible line to tread. And again, I can't blame coaches and players for being frustrated because, yes, by all means, we all want the egregious hits to be out of the game. But at the same time, like, are the suspensions fitting the offense? And are we actually doing what we can to maximize player safety regardless? And also, things like this have big ramifications. I don't know if you heard about, like, the concussion window being opened. Like, I think it was expanded 21 days and 12 days, if I'm not mistaken.
Right. It was always 12 for AFL, but now anything below AFL, basically meaning VFL and under and then junior footy and so on, is now up to 21 days, which then I found it really interesting that both the Sandful and the Waffle have basically said that what that kind of does is it does kind of, it'll be interesting to see how both those leagues approach it, because the West Coast Eagles, Fremantle Dockers, Port Adelaide, and Adelaide technically might have an advantage with some of their players because they may get knocked. They may get, because they're contracted as AFLers, they're only out for 12 instead of 21 for, say, a Peel Thunder, a Glenelg, a Claremont, so on and so forth. So it's been an interesting talking point. I agree with you. For me,
and also that opens up another can of worms. Like, if you get concussed playing reserves footy in the Waffle or Sandful, but you're an AFL listed player, when can you come back and what's your window? Like, these are things
I've heard that brought up. Yeah. And it'll be interesting to see how those leagues handle it. And here's, I'll go off on this. Jimmy Webster's hit is one that's easily put out of the game. You just have to tell people, hey, pull your head in. There's no reason. A, you're in a practice game. What the heck are you doing that in the first place? Exactly. And B, you have more than a couple of options to do there. You can smother, you can kind of ride them toward the boundary and push them out of play.
Yeah.
You can make a tackle. So there are options. Sam Powell Peppers is a little more grayish just because it is such a quick turnaround. But I also say this, two steps before that, he can clearly see that Rioli is tackling him, yet he still attacks the pack. So he puts himself in danger of hitting a potentially thrown Keane. So I understand people like split second decision. Again, I hate that argument because these are athletes that make split second decisions all the time. So that is a horrible argument and just doesn't fly with me. Okay. It's the same. The person that Collingwood brought in to kind of explain split second decisions was BS in the first place, because what he was saying, and literally I can show where that particular same player can do a handball in half of that time and hit it perfectly. So that argument is bollocks, BS, shite, whatever you want to say. I don't like it. I thought it was crap. And so, but we won't go to that. Like I said, Sam Pell Peppers, he hit the head. You're going to get suspended. It's just the way it is. accidents are going to happen that are still going to get suspended. But the thing is, you've got to have these players kind of understand that there has to be some kind of duty of care. I understand it's going to happen. I know that it also brought up the red card or ejection rule, where could a player get ejected if an egregious hit like Webster's happens again? And it's very fascinating to see where people kind of draw the line, and then you kind of all of these kind of random things that people can think about pop into their head, and I appreciate that people are thinking about it, but it's like you're taking something that relatively is multicolored and trying to make it black and white. Completely understand that. So I, again, both the suspensions I agree with. I think Pal Peppers is 4. It's perfectly fine. Setting a standard, Jimmy Webster, come on, Buffhead, what are you doing? You probably should have got 8, but I think 7 is perfectly eligible for it. I understand that it's his character is not that, but you still got to stamp out something like that that just is absolutely and completely unacceptable in the game. So we won't waste any more time on that. We'll jump to it. I'm gonna say this caveat just because I think it'll make the discussion a little bit better. Next question is, what team or teams were you the most impressed by? Take the Giants out of the equation just for this one thing. What team impressed you besides your Giants?
Just from opening round, just from
just from opening round.
I think you really do have to hand it to the Suns. Like, you know, like, again, obviously the preseason buzz around them is bigger than it ever is, than it's ever been, because of Damian Hardwick, of course. But yeah, I mean, they just really just jumped out ahead and dominated. Again, like the third quarter, Richmond fought back a bit, and it wasn't as lopsided as it could have been, but again, just a comprehensive victory for the Suns. And just in terms of, you know, they expect to make finals again this year, or not again for the first time, but they, again, that's the expectation, you know, and they've got the list to potentially do it. I think, you know, some of their developments from last year in defense are really interesting. Like I've mentioned Joel Jeffrey in previous podcasts. Moving him to defense is really interesting because he's a great athlete. He's got a terrific wingspan, and putting him at center back, and also they've got that young kid Mac Andrew, who, you know, has been a little up and down, but I think he was dropped a couple of times last year, but he's shown glimpses. Again, the athleticism's there, the experience is coming. Those guys who can take the next step in their development are going to be key for the Suns, because again, they know what they have with Noah Anderson. They know what they have with Matty Rowell. Ben King can have a big year. Rosas, I mentioned. You know, like, and Lukosius is a great, he's been a great find for them as well. So I think having the next core of young players at the Suns really emerge and take ownership, I think that's a big key for them this year. And Hardwick is installing the kind of culture where there is accountability, and there's, you know, like, there's a lot of mentorship, and, you know, guys are really learning just by osmosis, because they're around so many people who are like Matty Rowell and Noah Anderson, who are always going to put in the hard yards. So I think the Suns have a really bright future. You know, again, we've seen them start out great and then fade down the stretch. So, you know, we'll see where they go from here. But if they've got a clean bill of health, they're a very, very dangerous team on a good day. So, I think there's definitely elements there that are finals worthy. Now, do the pieces form the whole? We're going to see. So,
See, and for me, what I'm most impressed about is more of just because they're still not at full strength, and that's Carlton. Like, Carlton is not at full strength. They still no Sam Walsh, no Martin. So it'll be, they were very impressive again to go on the road. And again, it's never easy to win at the GABA. So if you can steal 4 points out of the GABA, that is an impressive performance. Hopefully Harry Mackay can keep this consistent goal kicking, consistent. We'll have to see. Again, there's a lot on that. Charlie Curnow, can he have another big season this year? Can Krippa lead this team? I'm fascinated to see how DeConing does in the ruck if he's by himself. Will we see Pitnett this year? Adam saw Zach Williams coming back after all of his injury issues was great to see. So this is a Carlton team that honestly, again, it's another one on paper, looks to be very, very good with the talent they have. But I was impressed that you get a big win being undermanned compared to what you thought. You consider a Brisbane team that was basically stepped in with no injuries, nothing. So to get a big win like that, that was impressive. And then we'll go to the tiny point on the side, disappointment. What team disappointed you the most this week?
I think it would have to be the Pies just because they're the reigning premier. I was thinking about it. I was going to say the Melbourne Demons, but again, they had a lot of headlines in the offseason that they did not want, the Melbourne Demons. So I think the Pies, again, just because it was a really lackluster performance, and again, because they're the reigning premiers. Like, just seeing some of the efforts from Darcy Moore, you know, he's an All-Australian. Like, there were some of his efforts that really were not befitting of an All-Australian. And again, you know, that was a back line that was under siege because, again, you have Alan Brown, Toby Green, Jesse Hogan, Brent Daniels, all those guys who are just running riot. But no, the Pies just, they looked so flat. They looked lethargic in terms of just, you know, they didn't, for the first time in a while, they didn't feel like a Craig McRae team. Like, you know, his style of play is so distinctive as a coach, and they just didn't have that flair and that class with the footy that they really needed. And you know, I think it's going to be on guys like Darcy Moore, like Pendlebury, Sidebottom, and, you know, those guys who've played a lot of footy and who are as good as you can get in terms of the leadership category. So it's their job to get under the hood and fix it. So.
Yeah. And that's, and it's like, and for me, it was also, I'm 100% with you. I think it's the Pies just because I heard Craig McRae saying we're not defending, we're going back to work again. And to put that kind of effort in, that the lack of effort so many times for several players, not just in the defense, but also in the midfield and the forwards, that's not good. Like that shows there's no hunger. I understand that's a GWS team that's really talented, and the excuse making that I'm starting to hear already. I'm like I understand it. Yes, you went on GWS, but you beat them last year to get to the grand final. You're the defending premiers. You've done all this talking. Craig McRae has done all this talking about how you're not defending a championship. You're going back to work again, and then to serve up that. It makes me question you a little bit. Like, are your players already kind of like, oh, we won the premiership this year, we don't have to put as much effort in? And then today interview still thought about him. We know the team, we know. Yeah, you should know that before round one, when you get before round zero, and you get beat by a GWS team that you played within 1 point of earlier in the year. Like, again, what I'm hearing from you and what I saw on the field are two completely different things. What part is lying to me? And that's the biggest question, because the effort that I saw last year from that Pies team from probably round 20 on, where they kind of figured it out and then ran through the finals, you didn't see what you saw in round one. I know there's still plenty of time for it, but that's not a good sign that you aren't ready to go. And you're stepping up against a Swans team this week that if you do it again, you will be punished. And you could be 0-2 to start the season. So it's not a good track record. So I was rather disappointed with the Pies this year, especially because of the talk that I heard coming from that. So, and then last but not least, since just before the predictions, what is the one game besides the Giants game that you're really looking forward to watching this round, in round one?
Well, going back to the Suns, I think their home game against the Crows is going to be really interesting to watch. I believe that's one of the Saturday games. Let me check.
Crows v. Suns are the primetime game on Saturday night.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, no. Again, these are two teams that were disappointed not to make the eight last year. They definitely have confidence that they feel like they're finals teams this year. We know what happened with the Crows last season, how they lost on the slimmest of margins, and that was the deciding factor in their finals fate. But you know, either way, these are two teams that feel like they're contenders, and they have reason to think that. You know, the Crows have really almost hit their stride under Matty Nix. You know, they kind of built things methodically. You know, again, they weren't afraid to take some losses as they kind of rebuilt the list around, again, you mentioned Richmond trying to rebuild around veterans. You know, why not replicate the Adelaide approach? You know, you've got Sloan, Tex Walker, all those guys who can help, you know, a younger list along. You can be selective in free agency. Anyway, I think, you know, the Crows have a good brand of footy. And again, on a good day, they can be as dynamic as any team in the league. But can they go up to Queensland and take care of a Suns team that just really took care of the Richmond Tigers? So I think, you know, the Adelaide Gold Coast matchup looms as I don't think it'll be on many other people's must-see lists, but that's a really intriguing matchup for a variety of reasons.
Yep. And then that was one. And then my other one is actually the next game, Sunday afternoon, Melbourne v. the Doggies. And it's for a couple of reasons. One, because how do the D's respond after a little bit of a lackluster performance against the Swans on Thursday night, 10-day break. But then we get to see was Coach Scott telling the truth that this is going to be such a great advantage for the teams that played first with the D's coming in with a little bit of game time compared to a Doggies team that has not played? Because if the Doggies smoke the D's here, it really kind of blows that whole advantage out the window. So I'm going to be fascinated by this one just because, and from what I'm hearing, potentially we have a huge drop from the Doggies lineup and Jack McRae with potentially the young kid with a ton of positive momentum coming out of it. Riley Sanders has talked about being in the squad for this Doggies team, and Coach Bevo is talking him upside and downside every way he possibly can. So that game has got a lot of things I'm very interested in, and a nice time for me at 10 p.m. on a Saturday night will be fascinating for me to watch that game there. So we'll go to it. We've kind of talked about a couple of them. We're less than like 8 hours away from teams starting to drop. So let's do some predictions. Let's tip round one, first full slate of games we have for the footy. Here we go, sir. Thursday night footy, the one everybody wants. Carlton, the Richmond, MCG. Who do you got?
I think this one's pretty easy. For me, I've got Carlton by 5 goals. I think it'll be, you know, that's 5 goals isn't a blowout. And again, I think Richmond is going to be competitive this year. But, you know, Carlton has too much momentum after that thrilling win. And, again, all eyes are going to be on Mackay, what he can do, if he can really, really, really be that guy from week to week and be good for 3 to 5 goals per outing. Like, I think that's huge for them. And if they can get his confidence level to where it needs to be, then I think it's all systems go for the Blues. Again, that Michael Voss toughness, they need to have that be their recurring theme, because we all know how dynamic he was as a player, and that energy needs to feed off onto the playing group, because you know they have the horses. You know, Cripps, Chera, you know, all those guys are really going to be influential as usual. But it's all about whether or not Mackay and the forward line can convert. Also, a key guy who they need to get back soon, injury wise, of course. We know about Walton Wietering, but an underrated guy who they could use is Jesse Mala. Of course, the Mala name needs no introduction for footy fans. But yeah, he had a toe problem, and I think he might be out one more round. So he had a solid season last year. He's a young talent, you know, came from Rio, of course, great family, you know, a lot of footy players in that family. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, again, if Carlton can just play 4 quarters of consistent footy and keep the pedal on the floor.
Yep, 100% with you on this one. I have Carlton. Richmond does get Nankervis, Dusty Martin, and Lynch back. All three have gone through training, and all three, from what I hear, are going to play. So that is a nice little boost for Richmond. But I just think Carlton's positive momentum. I the one thing I see here is our Carlton going to be let down a little bit by the loss of Doherty. How do they replace Doherty? How do they kind of handle that? Can they step up? The biggest thing is if Mekhi and Kurnow can get off the chain, it's going to be a long night for that Richmond defense. And I think, unfortunately, that may happen. So Carlton in this one, Friday night footy, I am thoroughly excited for this one. 3:40 in the morning for me is going to be quite the fun adventure to get up, but I will be up watching this as Collingwood take on the Sydney Swans at the MCG. I'm going to say it right now. I normally, in this situation, tip against my team at some fun, but I'm going to tip Sydney in this one. I do not like the way Carlton played in that GWS game. I think Sydney is the worst. Yep.
Carlton, but yeah.
Sorry, Collingwood, yes. I think Sydney's the worst possible matchup here because they're just as talented, they're just as attacking, and you get a Brody Grundy coming with some momentum, knowing that this is the original club that got rid of you, thinking that Darcy Cameron and Mason Cox were going to be better. So I think there's a little bit. I think there's a little bit of revenge factor for this. I think the Swans match up well. I think this is going to be a nightmare for Collingwood. I think Sydney win this. I think it's close. I think this is under three goals, but I think this is a cracking Friday night game. But I think the Swans go to the G and pull an upset and kind of douse a little bit of cold water on the flag unfurl for the Pies.
I think similarly. I would say it's going to be about two goals to the Swans as well. But the X factor is going to be the fact that it's at the G, you know. But again, that's an opportunity for the Swans to bank an early win over the reigning premiers at the G. That would be a nice building block for the rest of the season. And that's what it's all about early on in, you know, opening round one, whatever it is. So I think, yeah, I do think the Swans can get it done. I expect the Pies to start much faster. I expect them to have a much better energy level. McRae is not going to tolerate lackluster performances like that back-to-back. Like, I expect them to look like the Pies again. I think they were caught flat-footed last week up at GWS. But, yeah, I expect it to be closer, but Sydney's going to get this one done.
Yeah, that's going to be an absolute cracking Friday night game. Cannot wait for it. All right. We'll go to Saturday as Essendon host the Hawks at the MCG. This is a very interesting game for me. Who do you like in this one?
I like Essendon. I think they're tired of the narrative. You know, you got two teams here, actually, not just Essendon. Both these teams were aggressive in free agents, in case you noticed. There's definitely a sense of urgency at both clubs. You know, the Hawks, they've got a proud history. They've got a great supporter base. They don't like being a bottom four side. And Sam Mitchell, obviously, he has a long reach there because everyone knows what he did at that club as a player. But in terms of them needing to take a step forward, they do. And I think Essendon needs to as well. There's still questions about Essendon. Like, we know they don't have a reputation. You know, they're not tough enough. They're always going to fade out of contention, and we all know about the finals drought. That's the elephant in the room. But Brad Scott is in year two. He's a veteran coach. He knows his stuff. And again, those guys who are really needing to make an immediate impact, obviously Goldstein, getting Goldie in the ruck. Sam Draper, now I know he was playing VFL practice matches. If Goldie's the number one ruck, what do they do with Draper? I still think he's a good option. And if they want to experiment with throwing him forward or back, I'm sure they might. But, Goldie's a huge pickup. You know, he still has a few more years left. Obviously, he was a great player for some very, very bad North Melbourne teams, let's be honest. And getting Dersma, you know, getting a guy like Xavier Dersma, that can help the Bombers really find their feet in the forward line. You know, they really don't know who they have consistently in the forward 50. So I think, at the end of the day, the Bombers had one All-Australian last year, just one. And it was, surprise, Zach Merritt. And he's going to be huge again. And they need to get Darcy Parrish back healthy. I know he's had a hammy problem. His absence might be key here. But long story short, I do see Essendon winning this by a couple of goals. But big picture stuff, Essendon needs to win games like this. They should win with games like this. So if the Bombers can start off the season strong by beating the Hawks, then go ahead. They're definitely in a good spot.
I'm one of those where it's like I'm gonna boil it down plain and simply. Too many injuries on the defensive side for the Hawks. Essendon, I think, capitalizes on it. I think there's enough newness and enough ability for Essendon to start off the season. Again, the Hawks are a gritty side, but I just think the injuries and where they are, I think, are
Are
really
banged
gonna
up.
hamper them. So I think the Bombers win this one, but I don't put a lot of stock in this one for Essendon. I don't think this is one of those where you can make any claims of, well, they got a chance of making the finals this year. This is a Hawks team that's very, very injury prone. I worry that might be a bottom four side. So this is not one that I would write home to mama about for winning this one. So Bombers win it for me. I don't think I have to ask this one. GWS should beat North Melbourne pretty easily in this one, correct?
Yeah, they definitely should. It's another home game for us. As far as the we've talked about the Giants, of course. As far as the Roos go, I think they just need to avoid these distractions, like not talking about Clarko saying what he said, not just talking about the Taron Thomas debacle. Let's call it a debacle, because what a waste of talent. He's a guy that they really could have used, but and then of course they're didn't they lose Griffin Loeb for the season? I'm pretty sure he's out for the season,
He's
and that
indefinite. He's not out for the season. They haven't ruled him out for the season, but last time I looked at the injury list, he was still indefinite, so.
back line can't afford. I mean, Loeb is not an all-Australian defender, don't get me wrong, but that back line can't afford huge injuries like that, because they're going to be under siege most of the season, as we know. Again, we know who they can build around: Sheezel, Wardlow, LDU, Zerhar, Larkey. Those are guys that could put butts in seats and get the Roos to a level where they're not just competing, but they can actually steal a win every few weeks. No one's expecting them to upset Collingwood tomorrow, but this was a team that had such an ugly losing streak for such a good chunk of the season. Clarko had that suspension. Now he's getting fined. Again, all due respect to Clarko, let him do what he let him cook. Let him cook with the Roos. They need stability because they haven't had coaching stability for so long. But they need to start actually putting together some wins and taking that next step forward as a group. Me personally, I've got the Roos improving a bit. I think they could get to 14th on the ladder this year, but it's on them. I think those young guys have to take another step in their development. Clarko has to really, get his hands dirty with that, and the wins will come eventually because there is talent on that list. In previous years, there probably wasn't as much, but yeah, it's still a long road.
Yeah, I'm North's gonna push some teams. They're gonna knock a few teams off that they're probably not supposed to, but I just th this Giants team is just too good. And like I said, I'm hoping Finn Callahan's back after stepping on a nail at one of the beaches, which
Yeah.
is kind of the oddest injury to get, but it seems like footy players sometimes find some very odd injuries. Jaden Stevenson, yes, I'm talking about you. So
I was about to say.
I think GWS win this one. North is competitive, I think, till the fourth quarter, and then I think GWS's talent kind of runs it away a little bit on that one. So an intriguing one down at the finally finished GMHBA Stadium down in Geelong as the Cats host
Yes.
the Saints. This is an intriguing one for me because this is a Cats team that they've been a little bit snake bitten with Cam Guthrie playing 4 seconds of the preseason game and then doing a really bad quad injury after missing most of last year with numerous injuries, unfortunately. So I look at it like this. I think the Cats win it at home. I like Ross Lyon, but the Cats at home, I think Jeremy Cameron is set for a really big year. The biggest question will be is, can Geelong find a decent midfield? Not decent midfield. If they can get a decent midfield, their defense and their offense are really good. So if they can get a decent midfield, I think they've got a shot to win several games and maybe steal a finals berth here. So I have the Cats in this one over the Saints, but I think this is a cracking one down to GMHBA.
I have the Cats by a very slim margin, only by like a goal and some change. And I think the health thing is a key factor here. Yes, there's the home field advantage. Yes, the stadium's been renovated. We know Geelong rarely loses at home. But yeah, they're healthy. They're very healthy for the most part, apart from Guthrie heading into the year. I do think younger players, including a former Giant who I've had my eye on, I expect Tanner Bruin to have a big year. He's definitely going to have those kinds of opportunities in that midfield. If guys like him can, really if he's good for 25 touches a game, at least, that's a really reassuring sign if you're Chris Scott, because, you know, guys like that who can, you know, have the next man up mentality and be able to really provide some run and carry through that midfield. Because, yeah, you know, they're taken care of at both ends of the field. If they can just get the midfield going, I think they'll be in good shape. As far as St. Kilda goes, I think they have got some key injuries where if some of these guys weren't out, I might favor them. Specifically, Hunter Clark and Dougal Howard. Now, those are guys who, you know, aren't the flashiest players, but they mean a lot to what Ross Lyon is doing down there. You know, they're a key part of that structure and that game plan that the Saints have had. So those two absences are going to loom large. Again, we mentioned Webster. Of course, he's suspended, but, you know, he's in their best 22, but I don't think that's a catastrophic loss in the grand scheme of things. A few guys I've got my eye on with St. Kilda for the season. Everyone is singing the praises of Naziah Wanganeen-Miller. He's had a phenomenal preseason, apparently. You know, with Liam Henry gone to Frio, I think St. Kilda is really looking for a guy who can play that wing role, maybe slide down to half-back flank, have that kind of role to where he can, you know, be very handy out on the wing, win some of those one-on-one contests, use his speed, use his running ability to really set things up for St. Kilda and hit Big Mac King for some inside 50 marks. So I think having someone like him, you know, he's gonna have a solid season.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting. This is an intriguing matchup.
Yeah, and also I do like since he got his first All Australian last year, what's Callum Wilkie gonna do? I think he's another guy who's been very underrated for a good majority of his career. So if the Saints can keep him in good form and keep him healthy, I think he's another standout.
And then looking at it, like I said, we had kind of discussed this earlier, the fascinating one up at the Gold Coast as the Gold Coast Suns host the Adelaide Crows. How do you see in this one?
Yeah, I think this one is again, a very intriguing matchup, a fairly even matchup, too. It could go either way. I have the Suns by 2 goals. And I think, again, in terms of the absences, the Crows are going to be without Phil Thorpe. He had knee surgery in the offseason, if I'm not mistaken. I think he's still got he's back at training. I think he's still got a few more weeks left there, if I'm not mistaken. Ironically, a former son, Chris Burgess, who's an Adelaide boy originally, if I'm not mistaken, he's going to be probably stepping in and presumably playing center half forward while Tex Walker is at full forward. So, yeah, that's an interesting addition, but I don't know if I trust the Crows forward line. Of course, they're also trying to replace Shane McAdam. You know, that's a vacancy there. So I'm not quite sure. Plus Sloan is out as well. So I think the Suns have a clear advantage here. I expect Rowell and Tuke Miller to be feasting in the midfield. And of course them going up against the likes of, you know, Ben Keys, Jordan Dawson, and some of the Adelaide boys is it's going to be interesting. I think that midfield matchup is going to be brutal, but I do like Gold Coast in this
one. For the first time, we're going to disagree. I'm going to tip the Crowies on this one. Honestly, the thing though that kind of bothers me a tiny bit on this one is Tex Walker actually is probably not going to play. He's not going to be fit. So it's probably going to be Fogarty and Burgess as your forward line group, but it's Isaac Rankin's ability to go through the midfield, I think, could be a tiny bit of a spark. I'm fascinated by the big boys going at it, because as much as I love Sammy Naismith and was so happy to see him back, I don't think Witts was really tested too much against Sam Naismith facing Riley O'Brien, who I think these new rules I think are going to really benefit. I'm fascinated by this ruck battle between the two. And I think offensively the Crows are a dangerous matchup. They're a team that when they can put up points and put up points big time. Defensively is where they're defensively is still kind of up in the air. We'll have to see, do we see Dan Curtin premier in this game? The rumors that I'm hearing out of South Australia are no. It sounds like he will probably start in the Sandful, but again, we'll have to see. There's still a lot of selection. There'll be a lot of selection issues or selection ones that I'm intrigued about when I see them come out. But I'm gonna tip the Crows in this one. I have this weird feeling that Matty Nix needs to get wins on the road this year, like he didn't last year. And this is a huge opportunity. A Gold Coast team that everybody's kind of patting you on the back. You did great job against a Richmond team that honestly, if we're being honest, was undermanned and they weren't they, this was I think this could be a setup for the Crow for the Suns to stumble a little bit, which I kind of will bring people back to reality a little bit with a very dangerous Crows team that can put up points and put up points quickly, even without Tex Walker. I'm going to tip the Crows in this one for a little bit of an upset. So
Interesting. Okay.
we will
No, no.
jump.
I think that's interesting. Fogarty is another guy who needs a big year. I think he can get there, but you know, it's gonna be interesting to see what he can do with Phil Thorpe out, because they're gonna be the future up forward for them.
Yeah,
all right, now Scott, your go-to matchup, doggies and D's.
I'm fascinated by this one. I'm tipping another upset. I'm tipping the doggies in this one. I do not like the mojo out of the D's. I think that the blueprint to mess with Max gone a little bit. I think some teams are going to start taking it on, is starting to kind of whack him whenever they get upon their possibility to. I think Riley Sanders, I think, could have a breakout game in this one. I'm fascinated to see. Does Bevo make a few cuts? Do we see the confirm that Jack McRae is not going to play? Will Caleb Daniels start on the? How will their young forwards of Jamar Ogilhagen and Aaron Naughton, how will that work this year? How is their defense? Because their defense has been their Achilles heel for the last couple of seasons. I'm just feeling the doggies in this one. I just think it's a situation where you have a doggies team that's hungry. They've been told that there's all these issues. And the D's, I think, a little bit of underperforming. Now there's questions. Now that everything on that. Can the D's have a bounce back game? Absolutely. But I think this is a doggies team that the way they run, this could be an issue for them. So I'm gonna tip the doggies in this one with a little bit of another little bit of an upset call on this one.
I can't say I agree. And let me be clear, I went back and forth on this one because it does seem like the narrative around both teams that they just feel like they're both kind of spinning their wheels and in various different ways. Again, we know about the D's having some off-field issues. Clayton Oliver, there's been some drama there. But then again, you get the feeling like, again, if Gaughan can have a cracker of a game or Petrarca or anybody like that, you know, they can look like the demons from their flag years. So I think they'll win, but only by a goal. And in terms of the doggies, like, I like Ogilhagen. I think he can take that next step this year, but he's still someone that I'm just not 100% sold on. And with McRae being dropped, if that's true, I know we mentioned Treloar on our fantasy draft episode. I think there's still some questions about where Treloar fits, but you know, if McRae is dropped, I think, you know, if Treloar can kind of move inside and take that role in the midfield, then that would be great. You mentioned their back line. I have a feeling their free agents will be fine with time in the back line. And when I say they're free agents, I mean Caulfield. They picked up Nick Caulfield from St. Kilda, who is pretty solid. He's had some good games, he picked up some good experience, and presumably will play halfback flank. And with Caleb Daniel, that's a shocker that he got dropped, but he is getting up there in age. He is one of the best picks in the team. But, you know, I think if they can have Caulfield back there, they picked up Lockie Bramble from Hawthorne. He's a young player who's still got some potential. So if guys like that, again, they're not flashy players, but if they can find some form under Bevo, then the doggies could be in better shape. I just feel like they're not really, they just feel kind of directionless right now, the doggies. I think Ogilhagen needs to have a big year. I know they're still high on Sam Darcy because, of course, they're high on Sam Darcy. And if they can get him involved to where he can actually become a serious threat, then maybe they can surprise some people this year. But you feel like the doggies are always in prove it mode. I think the demons are going through an identity crisis. The doggies, it feels like with Bevo, you know, the longer that amazing flag in 2016 gets in the rearview mirror, the more the questions start mounting. So I think the doggies still have, you know, some issues there. I see it as their list is. I think they'll compete, but I like the D's by goal.
Yeah, it'll be that's going to be a fascinating game. It's weakness versus weakness, because it's forward line of Melbourne versus defensive line of the Western Bulldogs. It's going to be a fascinating matchup for sure. So we'll jump over to the Adelaide Oval as Port Adelaide get the nice little helper of here's West Coast to start your season off. So will we see a bounce back? Harley Reid most likely is going to make his AFL debut. It'll be fascinating to see the youngster make his debut. Port Adelaide is an enigma team for me. I'm gonna tip Port in this one only because I just don't think West Coast can just magically make the last couple of seasons disappear with form. Port Adelaide at home. I think it's gonna be a nice game. At least 4 goals for this one. But I think West Coast is a little more competitive than the Witches Hats that they have been for times at points last year.
Oh, 100%. And I honestly only expect like a few blowouts for West Coast this year. I think they're still bottom four, but Harley Reid is in town, all is well. Like and give them credit. Like their fans were still selling out Optus Stadium or close to selling it out, even when they were getting destroyed every week. And they're gonna be competitive. They've got a proud fan base and a proud club, so they're going to take a step forward. It remains to be seen how much Reed is going to be involved. You really hope he stays healthy because we know how high draft picks, if they get hurt early on, that can just shatter their confidence. So if he's got a clean bill of health and like the Eagles have talent, it's just they're still not close to where they need to be. So I think the power's going to win. I pick 5 goals. With them, Port Adelaide, I mean, obviously, Zach Butter was one of the best in ferrets for them last year. He's really becoming one of the best players in the competition. I really believe that. They had some nice pickups in free agency. Of course, Powell Pepper getting suspended, that does hurt their chances against some of the better teams. But the Power still have plenty of talent. Again, it's just we know their forward line issues. Charlie Dixon's getting old. Marshall, Finlayson, they're fine, but they don't scare you to death, put it that way. So I think they're still searching for a marquee guy like a Ben King, like a Harry Mackay, like a Buddy Franklin, who they can hang their hat on and really count on at the full forward position. So Port Adelaide, it feels like a last dance kind of year for Ken Hinckley. Like if they really catch fire and can secure a top four spot really early, who knows? We know Port Adelaide could potentially do that, but it just doesn't feel like they can, and that's not good. One guy who I am high on from them, another guy who has a familiar surname, Jace Burgoyne. Jace Burgoyne got his feet wet last year. I expect him to play a good amount more in defense this year for the Power. So I'm intrigued to see how often he's in the starting 22 because he's got all the talent in the world, obviously.
Yeah, it's gonna be a fa that's a fascinating one. Again, Port Adelaide, another enigma team, because I want to know, does
Certainly.
Savaratta Galia and Aliar play on the same team? And then who's going to be the defender and who's going to be the interceptor will be the main questions for that. And then last but not least, a fascinating one out at Optus Stadium is Fremantle host the Brisbane Lions. How do you see this one going?
I think the Lions are going to bounce back. Obviously, the injuries are piling up. Let's not forget, in addition to Caden Coleman, Croft has been out. I'm not sure when he's going to come back. And even the guy who's replacing Coleman in the back line, Connor McKenna, he's had a sore hammy. So they're thin in the back line right now. And that's going to put too much pressure on guys like Harris Andrews. And we know what Harris Andrews can do. He's one of the best defenders in the competition. But I reckon Brisbane will bounce back, but it'll be close. I'd say by 2 goals in the West. Frio, they're also in kind of an enigma team. Like in terms of individual talent, their list is as good as anybody's, but they've never quite put it all together under Justin Longmire. He's another guy who not a make it or break it year, but the clock's ticking for the Dockers. You really get the feeling like they need to overachieve and make finals. It doesn't feel like they should have to overachieve to make finals, but they're again kind of in no man's land, being in that, let's call it 6th to 12th on the ladder. You might get to the 8, you might not. So I think the Dockers are in a tough spot. again, we know what they have. I'm hoping, you know, Will Brody stays healthy, because when he was out, they definitely did not look like they should have. Obviously, Sean Darthy's had some health issues as well. And the question is, how do they use Nat Fyfe and Luke Jackson? So there's some long-term questions still at 3-0. Again, I think they can be competitive every week. I think they're going to surprise with some wins that you might not expect them to get. But they still don't scare me. And I think they still have a ways to go until they're really ready to make a push in September.
Yeah, it'll be very, very interesting. I got Brisbane in this one. Fremantle is still, the jury's still out for me on Fremantle, because I just worry, can they put up points? Defensively, they're really good. Midfield, really good. No Sam Darcy. So that means Luke Jackson's not going to have to go through the middle. It'll be fascinating to see how they handle that one. I just think Brisbane's got enough, even without, this is kind of that perfect little soft landing potential opponent, because it gives you that ability to kind of figure some things out. I think Connor McKenna should be good. I'm hearing that he's probably going to be fit for selection. So it's probably Connor McKenna in for Caden, for Kadini Coleman. So it's probably an even exchange there. It's not the same, because Kitty is just such a good player, and Connor McKenna is a good player, but he still has never reached that level that Kitty has. So it'll be fascinating.
Coleman could have won the Norm Smith in the grand final if Brisbane had won.
Yeah, he had a second half fade out, unfortunately, and Collingwood finally kind of found everything that they needed to, which is prototypical when it came to last year. So at Brisbane, I think I agree with you. I think it's under 3 goals. It's close, but it gives Brisbane that ability to test before they have to face another really good side later on in the season. So, well, Rick, that is it. We are less than 24 hours away from round one. I'm going to get this out, hopefully just before, probably about 9 to 10 hours before the first bounce of Carlton Richmond. So this will be really close. It may not do high numbers, but we're going to get it out anyway. So again, thank you, Hop, for hopping on the podcast. Again, all the best of luck out in LA. I know you start, as you said before, off mic, you're getting practice started. So best of luck with you and the Dragons. And again, thank you so much for hopping on the pod again.
Always a pleasure, Donnie. Love chatting footy with you. And it's going to be a really fun season, so let's keep it going.
So that is going to do it for another episode of Donnie's Disposal. Again, keeping out more footy coverage still to come on the channel, and we will be back again very, very soon.